All right, gang, welcome back. We're back in studio, and we are joined with Alexis Sanchez and Jake Rostovsky. Welcome, kids, to the show.
Hi.
Thank you so much for having us.
Great to have you here. We are going to talk about Transgender Awareness Month, and so why November? I'm just curious. Either of you know why we do this every November?
I don't, actually.
Actually, I don't either. Yeah. I don't either. Why is trans... Well, maybe it's around Transgender Day of Remembrance. That's November 20th. That must be a significant date.
Yeah, I know Transgender Day of Remembrance has been... It's been around for a while. Mm-hmm. I can remember being in high school, so that must have been like 2000. Am I dating myself? It must have been like 2003 or so. And I remember there was the murder of a transgender woman named Gwen Orahu, which really helped to prompt.
That must be at the anniversary, maybe of her death. We'll look it up during the break. November 20th? But this whole month, communities around the country are celebrating trans awareness. And so, I mean, we're in big cities and small towns right now broadcasting. What do people need to be aware of?
That we exist, that the fight is just beginning, and we won't remain silent. It's our time now. It's the time for the trans community to be out and proud and make some achievements in politics as well.
Danica Rome in Virginia just got reelected state legislature.
I think the thing that I always like to bring into the forefront when it comes to Trans Awareness Month is just the disparities, you know, especially like now it's really wonderful. We're getting better media portrayal of trans people on television. It's not like it was when I was growing up, where if you saw a trans woman on television, it was generally a sex worker or a victim of a crime on like a crime show or something like that. And now we're getting actual fleshed out, really fantastically written trans characters with depth. But that doesn't mean that we've achieved full equity, especially when you look at intersecting identities and trans people of color still face incredible challenges when it comes to just like access to housing, access to employment, access to, you know, just being able to thrive.
You know, there are some studies that suggest that at the root of homophobia is misogyny, that at the root of homophobia is the hatred of women, and that often men who beat up, especially trans women, there's something very threatening to them about a man in their minds pretending to be a woman. And there's just something gets triggered. And it's to me, it's so extreme and so out there, I can't even put my head around it. But I mean, I'm just curious, do trans men experience the same level of violence that trans women do?
Speaking as a trans man, I think the violence is definitely different. It's more of an emotional and mental violence than physical. I'm a gay identified trans male, and so when I walk into a gay male space, I'm often met with exclusion. I'm often met with people telling me that I don't belong. So
wait, in a gay male? Like in a gay bar or a place where gay men are gathering?
Yes, with cisgender. So cisgender gay men are gathered. I'm told that I do not belong because I don't have a penis.
Okay, I don't know who your friends are, but they suck.
they just
suck. I can't imagine any of my gay male friends feeling that way or saying that. And maybe because the experiences we had is coming up through the 80s and the 90s, you know, we looked for life wherever we could find it in the middle of a battle around HIV and AIDS. It didn't really matter. And that's really crazy to me, Jake.
Well, I think if we think about what you were talking about, you know, misogyny and all that kind of stuff, we can kind of think of it as gay male, cisgender gay men don't feel that trans gay men have struggled or lived the same, you know, existence, right? The fight on HIV, let's say, is not ours to fight with. So we're often met with this, you're really not one of us, and you can never know what it's like to be one of us. And so we're excluded. And then our trans sisters are more of the forefront of the physical violence. That's what we hear more of. Right. But in all actuality, mental and emotional violence can sometimes be just as damaging. Look at suicide rates, look at self-harm, you know. So both sides are, as Alexis so eloquently said, you know, facing disparities.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really true. You know, we, Alexis, you brought up the depiction of sex worker, but I know that historically for a lot of trans women, that was survival, sex.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it still exists to some degree. We've had Wes Sigmiller on here a couple of times talking about survival sex and trans women. How you both have what I guess I'll call real jobs. You have jobs. How did you make the transition from, I mean, after transition to just chop chop. Did it ever come up that you were trans? Or?
Pun intended, right?
Yeah, pun intended. Yeah, pun intentional. No, don't hit the rim shot.
It's too late on it.
Too late for the rim shot. Okay.
I know for myself, you know, I do a lot of trainings with, sometimes we'll consult with Transkin Work and we'll do workplace trainings that just kind of go over the statistics about unemployment in the trans community, right? Because oftentimes there's these internal biases that, you know, the people who are doing the hiring don't even realize they have, but they'll see a trans candidate and, you know, subconsciously just decide that that person isn't as qualified. So me personally, in my experience, I've gotten a career because I've worked three times harder than any candidate, just showed up early, stayed later. I've really done an exceptional job of marketing myself, but I really feel like for me to have the same shot at a lot of opportunities, it's just I have to work a lot harder and be better networked than everyone else around me.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I can't attribute much to, except I was very privileged. And that's a conversation for, you know, 30 minutes, right, about privilege. But my parents helped me, especially my mom, helped me understand that my worth is more than my identity. It's who I am as a person. So she helped me build other skills. And so when I went into the workplace, I showed up with those skills rather than my trans identity. But I like I said, I'm so privileged. That's not the experience of 99.9% of trans individuals.
Do you think there's a concerted effort for more visibility for trans communities today than, let's say, 20 years ago? Because I know 20 years ago when I met trans women or men, often I didn't even know they were trans women or men until they told me. They led this very secret life. Now it seems like everyone's pushing to be out and open and get it discussed. I think that's intentional, I hope.
Yeah, that's a hard question.
I feel like a lot of it goes back, or at least when I was coming out to myself and like doing research on trans stuff back in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was this narrative about assimilation. And I think we saw it like across the LGBT community, right? It's like assimilation versus, oh my gosh, what's the other term? I'm blanking on it. But it's like, as a community, do we try and assimilate into social norms or do we try and move social norms as a community? And it's always been a debate, you know, like for the G, for the L, for the B, and for the T. I think just with the T, for a lot of us, we don't have that option. So there's always been that pushback, and there's always been the voices in the community that say, like, we shouldn't be pushing for assimilation. You know, like, we shouldn't. There were voices back in the fight for marriage equality that said, instead of pushing for marriage equality, we should be looking at the Equal Rights Amendment, because that will just create more protections for everyone. And so I feel like a lot of that still exists today.
Mm-hmm. Totally, yeah. I think I remember I came out when I was 2003. So the goal, the only goal was, as we called it then, to pass, right? That's assimilation. So I think it's so awesome now that the goal is more to just be who you are, and it's okay to be who you are out and proud, and it's also okay to assimilate. So it's changed. It's definitely changed.
When we come back, gang, we'll be continuing our discussion with Jake Rostowski and Alexis Sanchez, Trans Awareness Month, here on Channel Q. Welcome back, gang. It is Transgender Awareness Month, and we are talking to Jake Rostowski and Alexis Sanchez here in studio about Trans Awareness Month. And guys, when we just left off before the commercial break, I asked you guys during the break about your background, because I just wonder culturally if there was anything that came up. Alexis Sanchez, obviously, you're Latina, right?
Yeah.
And Jake, you're Polish, Jewish.
Yes.
Anything about being raised in that culture, that community, that made it more difficult or easier to transition?
Well, in the Jewish tradition, we have what's called a bar or bat mitzvah. And coincidentally, that was around the time where I also was like, wow, I'm about to become a woman in my culture, and I really don't want to become a woman, so what's going
true.
On?
That's true.
So I actually attribute a lot of that like coming of age process in the Jewish tradition to my coming of transgender identity. Mm. I don't know, like, how I would call it, but
it did kind of force the issue, right?
Totally.
Bat mitzvah or bar mitzvah, and yeah, becoming a woman, becoming a man. That's
Like under the eyes of God, like, you know, you're like, what am I?
Kind of puts the question right there.
Yeah.
Did you have a quinceañera? Am I saying it right? No.
Quinceañera?
Quinceañera. There we go.
No, maybe when I turned 15 after coming 15 years of having been out of the closet. But actually, you know, growing up in my parents are Central American, and growing up in a Latinx, like, very religious household, my dad was incredibly homophobic, and that kept me in the closet for a really long time. Mm. And then my mom has just, like, this really wonderful view, which she's passed on to me in her spiritual tradition, about finding love and for everybody, for all peoples, and just really understanding, like, the struggle of marginalized folks. And that really resonates with just the trans experience worldwide. But that machismo that exists in like Latinx culture and like all that, there's a lot of animosity for transgender women, to the extent that, you know, in a lot of the country that my parents are from and a lot of the surrounding countries, transgender women flee and seek asylum here because you know, where they come from, like, they're murdered just for existing.
Yeah. You know, that machismo, as you describe it, for Latino communities, and that's obviously my community, it shows up to in black male communities. Mm-hmm. And if I watch a Trump rally, very clear in white heterosexual male world.
Yes.
It's just, okay, you're all men, you're all fine, you don't need to prove anything, just leave us alone.
Well, no, that's the problem.
No offense, Jason. Yeah. No offense, Jason.
I'm not a white male.
That's right. Jason is a Muslim.
Lebanese
so Muslim.
I have that little European. Although Europeans are white too.
We don't want to. Yeah, let's not go down that road.
We're not going to get down that rabbit hole.
TDOR, Transgender Day of Remembrance, that happens every November 20th all over the country?
Yes.
So wherever people are listening, they should check in with their local, LGBT center?
I'd say generally their LGBT center will have resources. Some communities that have really, really great supportive services tend to have, like, really big Trans Day of Remembrances. And then other times, communities where the queer community is a little on the smaller side, generally you can still find information if you just are looking at the local LGBT center.
Yeah, right. And you can also find some virtual ones that you can join in on, so Facebook, Instagram, live stories, stuff like that. And I know some Facebook communities, if you're not out and don't feel comfortable going in person to TDOR, you can find some community and safety online as well.
So, I mean, let's imagine somebody's in a small town or a suburb listening right now. They're thinking, I want to do a TDOR. What do you do? I mean, what is the format that will be followed here for our TDOR?
So generally, the format that we're going for this year, we've really engaged community and letting Black trans women really create, because they're disproportionately represented when it comes to the people who are murdered. So we're letting them kind of take the lead in production. So I'd say first, find any community that you can, and finding those intersecting identities and the people who are affected most are generally, like, really great resources. We have some speakers. I think we have a performance or two, but the core of the Trans Day of Remembrance is generally the reading of the names, and we'll have we'll have community members come out and read the name of a trans person that was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, we'll share. This year, there's been 22 people in the United States as of November 8th.
Yeah, yesterday, right?
Yeah. So there's been 22 people who have been murdered this year. So we'll read those 22 names in addition to, I believe it's Rita Hester and Gwen Arahu, who those names are read every single year. And then depending on the bandwidth, some ceremonies will read all the names worldwide, which is generally over 300. Mm. And then some ceremonies will do just like whoever we lost.
Sounds like a good place for clergy.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think it really depends, because if we look at historically the trans community in relation to spirituality or even, you know, various uniformed individuals, it can be a little triggering. So I think something that's really important is think about the community in which you live in, think about what's going on currently in your community, and then as long as you're reading names and honoring our trans brothers and sisters that were murdered or passed away from suicide, you know, that's what's most important, right?
Right.
There's no right or wrong way.
So far, you guys have talked about there's going to be a job fair, it sounds like, for trans people this month. We got the Transgender Day of Remembrance. Any other programs or activities that you're aware of that happen around Transgender Awareness Month for the month?
I feel like the community just has a ton of great programming. I'm very tired because I'm trying to go to as many of these as I can make it to, realistically. And I know in West Hollywood, a nonprofit's getting together to do a trans swim day, which is pretty cool. And they're doing
trans swim day.
Tomorrow,
yeah.
Right?
I love that.
Yeah. It's, you know, like there was this survey that was done and they surveyed the cisgender population and the transgender population. And they're like, if you could abolish gendered anything for the day, what would you do? And cis people were like all over the place, and 90% of trans people said I would go swimming, because generally swimming, just aquatic centers and like swimming in general, you know, like it's not conducive to, like, if you have, you know, just kind of, if you're not comfortable with your body or if you're living outside the gender binary. So we're having this really cool event at the West Hollywood Aquatic Center tomorrow.
It's a heated pool.
Thank God it's a heated pool. I never would even thought about that. Well, there you go. I'm a cisgender male. So are you. You're a cisgender male too. We're learning something, Jason.
But see, that's the privilege, right? Is like, think about it, is like cisgender people couldn't agree on like one thing that they would all love to do if gender was abolished. And trans people were like, we just want to go swimming. Like, we just want to hang out in the pool. Like,
I would say sing.
Sing?
That's what I would say.
I can't sing regardless of what.
Alexis can sing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
Yeah.
She's like, no.
You have to talk to my agent. It'll be a whole thing.
I know the trans chorus, the one and only all trans chorus is here in Los Angeles, and they have been doing incredible work. Are they going to participate in any of this?
This year, we are not having them perform, not because we don't love them, but just because we are so jam-packed. But I know that if you look them up online, you could find they're always performing all over Los Angeles.
Either of you have any online? There they are now. There's the bass section. Both genders. There's the bass section. Any websites you guys want to refer our listeners to if they need more information on anything you've talked about?
Yeah, sure. I'm doing a trans training for mental health providers, medical providers that can be found on transhealthnow.com. Our training is in March.
Awesome. Alexis?
I know the city of West Hollywood has, it's just like weho.org/Trans Awareness Month or TAM. I can't remember which one of the two, but if you do a Google search for West Hollywood and Transgender Awareness Month, you can find all the events that are going on in WeHo.
Awesome.
And say hi to us.
And we'll say hi to you. All right, gang, when we come back, we'll be talking to Steve Afriat about early days. Thank you, Jake Rostovsky, Alexis Sanchez. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks,
and I'll see you both at T-Door, if not sooner. Thanks for tuning in, gang, here on Channel Q.